I'm a little boy with glasses, the one they call a geek. A little girl who never smiles, cause I've got braces on my teeth. And I know how it feels to cry myself to sleep. I'm that kid on every playground who's always chosen last. A single teenage mother trying to overcome my past. You don't have to be my friend. Is it too much to ask? Don't laugh at me, don't call me names, don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, we're all the same. Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me. I'm the cripple on the corner, you pass me on the street. I wouldn't be out here begging if I had enough to eat. And don't think I don't notice that I rise never meet. I lost my wife and a little boy, someone crossed that yellow line. The day we laid them in the ground, the day I lost my mind. And right now I'm down to hold this little cardboard sign. So don't laugh at me, don't call me names, don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, we're all
right. Don't laugh at me. This here is Big Dot, better known as Missionary Kenneth Wolfgang, with you on another Jumbo Braille program here on the Success Radio Network, Station 2. The one and only program here on the Success Radio Network that can be felt. And we just want to say welcome one, welcome all to the program today, especially our surrounding city and states, our countries near and far, as well as those who called 515-605-9340. Again, 515-605-9340. Just press number one, join the conversation, as we'll be glad to hear from you, especially today, since we are going to be discussing and ending the last few chapters of the book we've been on, which is Lucky Penny, and that is the last book of the Coulter family historical books. And then we'll be getting into the actual Coulter family books. And yes, Ghost Dot, I did finally, it took me a few, but yeah, it is Baby Love, which will be the next book. And that begins the Coulter family regular books. That's the first book. So we will be in that next time we start and we get together. So,
I really want to enjoy that book. It's very good.
So But first off, for all you out there, Ghost Dot, who do we got scared up for today? Who did you scare up for us?
Well, we have God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Ghost, band of angels, you and me.
Ah, well, you ain't been doing much scaring. You better get back to practicing what you learned in school, or did you not graduate yet?
Yeah, I graduated from both high school, college, and beyond that. So.
Oh, you didn't go to Buhler University and get
no.
your degrees in hauntology and scarontology?
No, I took correspondence courses.
Okay, so you didn't get to Buhler University yet. So you're not an accredited ghost yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you'll have to go to Buhler University and get your degrees in hauntology and scarontology.
Yes, sir.
Then you can scare up more listeners better that way. All right. Well, you'll just have to work on that. Yeah, have to work on it better. You know, maybe practice your woo a little better. Okay.
You're such fun, darling.
All right. And maybe I could do it better than you.
You probably could.
But anyway.
And you could probably do it better than me, too.
But anyway, so considering that fact, we are going to go ahead. So far, we've had Brianna, who originally had been writing all these letters, and David got a hold of them. She called herself Brianna Paxton. And she had all these letters that she wrote to a David Paxton, not realizing there was a guy who really was named David Paxton, but he was not a miner, but a sheriff in a little town called No Name. And lo and behold, he shows up. She's got this daughter named Daphne, and this girl looks very much like David's mother. And he's saying all along, hey, I know a Paxton when I see one. And so at first she says, hey, look, I, you know, she said, no, that ain't your daughter. That ain't your daughter. But finally she acquiesces. They get married the real way. They, or at least they didn't get married the real way yet, but they at least fell in love. They're kissing now. And so we are going to go from that point and see what happens to this situation. And we're going to pick up from that point where we left off. So we are going to let you give us the preliminaries, and then we are going to go ahead and get right into our reading today.
Honey, I think it'd be considered something like a common law type marriage, sort of like with them.
It wasn't a common law marriage. It was done in what they call a kangaroo court, because
it
wasn't totally legal.
You're right.
Because they didn't have the appropriate number of witnesses and et cetera,
right.
et cetera. So that's why.
You're right, though.
Okay, so go ahead with the preliminaries for us.
Tonight, we'll be reading Lucky Penny, Culture Family Historical Books by Katherine Anderson, Book 4, read by J. Michael McCullough. We'll be reading Chapters 20 and the epilogue. Take it away, Kenny, on the Six Eyes Radio Network. Yeah, baby.
Well, you meant chapter 22 in the epilogue is where we're at.
Oh, I must have got the wrong numbers on here. I'm sorry.
But that's all right. I corrected you. So here
Thank
we
you.
Go.
Thanks for correcting me. All right.
Chapter 22. On Sunday, David rented a buggy, and he and Brianna drove out to Ace's ranch to collect Daphne. The whole family was there. When David parked in front of the house, Brianna saw Isa on the porch with Daphne, reading to her from his Bible. Little Ace was in the swing, pumping so hard with his feet that the back of the seat almost thumped the siding. Caitlin and Rachel spilled out through the door and down the steps, trying to hug Brianna before David could swing her from the conveyance and get her steady on her feet. "It's good to see you again so soon," Caitlin cried. Rachel beamed a smile and hooked her arm through Brianna's. We missed both of you at the party yesterday. Come inside. We have some surprises for you. The surprises were two lovely house dresses, one pink and one yellow, which Caitlin and Rachel had made for her. Before Brianna knew it, she was in the front bedroom, standing on a stool, surrounded by female relatives who checked the gowns for proper fit and length. I don't know what to say, Brianna told them, and she truly didn't. They fit almost perfectly, and oh, they are so pretty. Dory laughed. You should have heard them, fretting aloud about having the audacity to make dresses for a fashion designer. Why? Brianna cried. You do fabulous work. If you want a job at my shop, you've got it. Rachel stood back. I have to admit, you do look gorgeous in both colors. And now you can save your silk gowns for the shop. These are far more practical for out at David's ranch. Brianna felt as if her insides were made of melting butter. For the first time, she was certain of the future. She would be at David's ranch often, and in these women, she'd found a mother and sisters. Both Rachel and Caitlin went straight to work doing minor alterations on the house dresses, while Dory and Brianna adjourned to the kitchen to prepare a huge evening meal. After a boisterous supper that featured tasty dishes, laughter, and a great deal of teasing, David brought out his fiddle. It was so wonderful to watch Ace gently guide his red-haired wife into a dance. Joseph handed little Joe to Dory and swept Rachel into his arms next. Soon, Etha took over playing the string instrument so David could waltz with Brianna. Dory blushed like a schoolgirl when Joseph plucked little Joe from her lap, handed him to Ace, and bowed over her hand, asking her to take a spin with him. Even little Dory Sue bobbed around the room, looking adorable in a green frock. When the evening grew late, David collected his family and assisted them into the buggy. Brianna held her two new dresses on her lap. Daphne was squeezed in between them. Sam lay under her feet. It was a glorious early summer night, the breeze almost balmy and sweet with the scents of wildflowers and prairie grass. Daphne promptly fell asleep. Sam began to snore. Brianna gazed at the sky, trying to follow the point of David's finger as he showed her the North Star and explained how to navigate. In that moment, only one direction mattered to Brianna, and that was forward. The future beckoned to her, filled with promise. In all her life, she could not recall ever having been so happy and content. Over the next few days, Brianna and David lived the blissful existence of newlyweds, sneaking to make love each night after Daphne fell asleep. Brianna was so happy that she felt frightened. What if something happened to spoil it all? David pooh-poohed the notion. I've waited all my life to meet the woman of my dreams, he told her, and nothing and no one will ever take you away from me. Daphne blossomed in the warmth that now filled the apartment. One evening after supper, she whispered to David, I'm so glad you decided to spend more time brushing your teeth, Papa. Mama likes you a lot better now. It's so much more fun when she laughs and acts silly with us. Midweek, Brianna accompanied David and the child to the ranch for two overnight stays to join in family activities. Each morning, it was a mad rush for Brianna to get back into town to open her shop. She seriously began to contemplate changing her business hours so she could be with her husband and daughter in a real home environment every single evening. She enjoyed traipsing around behind Daphne, who spent every spare second with her new pony, Blinky, or with the kittens. Sam was the child's constant companion, and Brianna came to adore the silly dog in a way she wouldn't have believed possible in the recent past. David encouraged Brianna to embrace life with him. I think you should change the shop hours, he said. Open later in the morning. It's not as if you need the income. Designing gowns should be fun, not endless hard work. And why can't you hire a seamstress to help? There are plenty of ladies in no name who could use an income. Brianna was excited by the suggestion. If I hire someone, I can assure you of one thing. I'm a much better boss than Abigail ever was. David hugged her close. Yes, you certainly will be. Come live with me at the ranch. My deputies are well trained. We've driven away almost all the rowdies. It isn't really necessary for me to stay in town half the week. In fact, I see no reason why I can't make my nights there the exception instead of the rule, as long as I'm in town to pull the day shift Monday through Friday. Looping her arms around his neck, Brianna leaned back in the circle of his strong embrace. That, sir, is an offer I simply can't refuse. It'll take me a bit of time to hire and train someone, but I shall get right to it. Ever conscious of Daphne, David stole a quick kiss. Put a rush on it. I soundproofed the walls of my house, and we can put our daughter in the room farthest away from ours. I'll teach you how to make beautiful music with mattress springs. That was a lesson Brianna anticipated with bone-melting delight. The next Friday night, Brianna made her grand entrance at the social, wearing her gorgeous burgundy gown, which sported a scalloped neckline beaded with seed pearls, outrageous puffed sleeves that narrowed at the elbow to skin her forearms, and an overskirt with scalloped edges and a flowing bustle that swept the floor behind her in a cascade of shimmering silk. Clinging to David's arm, she was immediately surrounded by ladies who admired her dress. "I'm out of here," David whispered. "I'll be by the punch bowl." Daphne raced away to find Ace, Caitlin, and Grandma Dory. Brianna was left to field eager questions and assure potential customers that she would happily consult with them if they came by the shop on Monday to make appointments. It was a victorious moment for Brianna. Her dream of becoming a respected designer was coming true, and she owed it all to David. David felt as if he might burst with pride as he watched his wife hold court. She was breathtakingly beautiful in the burgundy gown. Over the last week, she fretted that the red in her dark hair might clash with the dress, but David could attest to the fact that it didn't. She shimmered like a bright flame, making the women around her look like drab hens. He felt certain that every lady at the social would be begging for Brianna's dressmaking services before the night was over, and he already had a plan in mind for advertising in Denver to net his wife a wealthier group of customers. David ladled himself a cup of punch and scanned the hall to find Daphne. He spotted her, waltzing with little Ace at the edge of the crowded dance floor. Sam circled the children as if he were dancing, too. Damn. In 9 or 10 years, Daphne would be a handful of trouble with those perfect features and huge blue eyes and that glorious golden hair. The boys would be following her around like besotted puppies. David smiled as he watched her try to guide her cousin. Little Ace was all feet and as clumsy as a five-legged goat. Brad and Beth Thompson stood near David's family, Beth looking lovely in a pink gown, Brad bursting with pride when people came over to admire his infant son, Tobias, only a couple of weeks old. "You stupid, pathetic imbecile!" David jerked and nearly slopped punch down the front of his birthday shirt, his only concession to formal wear. He looked down to find Hazel Wright up on her tiptoes, trying to get nose to nose with him. "What put a bee in your bonnet?" he asked. "Wrong question." Hazel sneered. "I know," she said, "everything." She held a cup of punch in her hand and was shaking so badly that David feared for her pretty yellow dress. "Doing right by a woman over a child that isn't even yours? You, David Paxton, are a fool, a stupid, gullible fool."
"What the hell are you talking about?"
"The Pinkerton report. That's what I'm talking about." Hazel's voice had risen to a shrill pitch. "I've read the entire outrageous thing." David's stomach felt as if it had plunged to his ankles. Oh, dear God.
Hazel had found the spare drawer key and snooped in his desk. Rage snapped through his body like jolts of electricity. But before he could speak or control his reaction, he glimpsed a flash of burgundy at the corner of his eyes and jerked around. Hazel turned with him. Brianna stood there. The noise level in the hall was so high that David doubted she had overheard anything Hazel had just said, but it was obvious to anyone looking that the schoolteacher was on a rant. Brianna's face had gone pale, and the luster of happiness in her green eyes had vanished. Hazel narrowed her gaze. Ah, so here is the conniving little harlot and fiancé stealer. How delightful! Brianna flinched at the words. I have no idea what you're talking about. Hazel stepped toward her. For David, everything slowed down. He saw Hazel lift her cup, saw her shoulders tense, and knew what she meant to do, but he felt like a bug trying to slog through cold honey. Before he could step in to protect his wife, Hazel tossed her punch in Brianna's face. Brianna jerked, squeezed her eyes closed, and stood there with her shoulders braced. The crimson punch beaded on her dark lashes, trickled down her cheeks, and cascaded in streams onto her bodice, possibly ruining the fabulous dress she'd worked so many hours to create. How dare you try to pass off your sister's bastard child as David's? Hazel shouted. Were you stupid enough to think he'd never learn the truth? And now just look at the mess you've caused, you conscienceless little bitch! David loved me. We were planning to marry. Now he's chained to a liar and schemer who isn't worthy to kiss his feet. David couldn't quite credit his ears. Hazel was the schemer. She'd gotten into his desk on the sly and read a report meant for his eyes only. No one was allowed in that center drawer, not even his deputies, and Hazel had visited him at his office enough to know that. His brain felt frozen. He set aside his punch. His fists knotted at his sides. What the hell could he do? He'd never struck a woman in his life, and he wouldn't allow himself to knock Hazel right on her pompous ass. But boy, howdy, it was tempting. He sent Brianna an encouraging look, trying to let her know she would have his complete support if she decided to let Hazel have it. But she kept her eyes squeezed closed. Come on, Shamrock. Let that Irish temper kick into play. If Brianna decided to empty the entire punch bowl over the other woman's head, David stood ready to help her lift the damn thing. If ever a female had deserved a public set-down, it had to be Hazel Wright. But no, Brianna, always so controlled and conscious of propriety, merely opened her eyes, lifted her chin, and swept past Hazel with regal disdain. Oh, that's rich! Hazel shrieked. Try to run from the ugly truth. It won't work, I tell you. Before the night is over, everyone in this town will know what a lying, conniving whore you really are. David started to go after his wife, but then he remembered that, unlike Brianna, he hadn't been raised by nuns. He rounded on Hazel. When did you sneak into my office? He demanded. And what gave you the harebrained notion that you had any business snooping through my paperwork? Shaking with anger, Hazel glared up at him through shimmering tears. You have no call to take me to task. You're a cheating skunk. You broke my heart and made me look like a fool before the whole town. For weeks, everyone has been staring at me. I can't go into a shop without people whispering behind my back. I had every right to know before today why you left me in the lurch. And before this night is over, every person in this town will learn the truth. You didn't forsake me because you had a wife and patched things up with her. You were hoodwinked by a pretty, immoral opportunist who shackled you into marriage by leading you to believe you were the father of a child that isn't even hers.
Well, I sure as hell thank my lucky stars I never married you, he retorted. Under that sugary act, you're as venomous as a snake.
All Hazel cared about was saving face, and she didn't give a whip how many lives she destroyed in the process.
You even hit my dog. People like you disgust me.
I disgust you, Hazel said in a hoarse whisper. You're nothing but a two-bit marshal in a dusty little town. That badge doesn't make you anybody. At least I have an education.
From the corner of his eye, David caught another flash of burgundy, and the next instant, Brianna stepped into view with an apple pie balanced on the upturned palm of her hand. Scarcely able to believe his eyes, David watched his wife pause in front of Hazel and silence her by slapping the pie dead center in her face. Hazel gasped. Apples clung to her shocked countenance. A chunk of crust dangled from the bottom lip of her yawning mouth, and blobs of gooey fruit decorated the bodice of her yellow dress. Brianna smiled, sat down the pastry plate, daintily dusted her palms, and said, "Perhaps in the future you will think twice before you cast slurs upon another lady's reputation." Then, head once again held high, Brianna made another regal exit, her magnificent gown looking spotless from the back. Hazel sputtered and squealed, wiping apple from her cheeks. David realized that a dozen people nearby had seen Hazel get the pie in her face, and their laughter was spreading around the room. It took all his self-control to gulp back a guffaw himself. Hazel had gotten precisely what she deserved, and David was so proud of Brianna. His shamrock had finally come out of hiding. There had been so much noise in the hall with the music, conversation, and the thumping footsteps of dancers that he felt sure only a few individuals had overheard Hazel's diatribe. Dripping chunks of pie, Hazel would flee for home to at least wash up and change clothes before she repeated the story to anyone else. He searched the crowd for Daphne, saw her still dancing with little Ace, and spun on his heel to go after his wife. His family would look after his daughter. Right then, Brianna needed him most. Typical of June near the Rockies, the night air embraced David with chilly arms, but he barely felt the bite. With three chinks of his spurs, he loped across the street and gained the opposite boardwalk. He was at the dress shop door in 30 seconds. Recalling Hazel's insults, he smiled bitterly, thinking it didn't take long for a two-bit marshal to cover ground in a dusty little town. If she thought so little of the community that paid her teaching wages, why the hell had she moved there in the first place? David let himself in and locked the door behind him. Taking the stairs four at a time, he reached the landing, opened the apartment door, and immediately spied Brianna sitting rigidly at the kitchen table facing him. Pale and expressionless, she didn't look up. She sat as still as an alabaster statue. As David drew closer, he could see the tracks of tears on her cheeks, which had left white trails in the crimson punch that had dried on her skin. "Oh, David," she whispered, her glassy gaze fixed on the tablecloth. "You're still in love with her, aren't you? That's the only reason I can think of for you to tell her the truth about Daphne's father." David felt as if the floor had disappeared from under his feet. "No, God, no." He stepped closer. "You've got it wrong, Shamrock. I never told her anything." "Really?" She finally looked up at him. There was a world of heartbreak in her eyes. "She knows every dirty detail about Moira, about me. How could you do that, David? If you wanted to be rid of me and Daphne, you needn't have gone to such lengths. I offered to leave, to go with you to Denver and get an annulment. It was you who talked me out of it." David sank onto the chair across from her. "I put the report from the Pinkerton agency in the center drawer of my desk for safekeeping. Nobody is allowed to get in that drawer. It's where I keep things that are for my eyes only. My deputies know that, and unfortunately, Hazel visited me there enough times to know that, too. I guess she found where I keep the spare key and sneaked in there tonight to go through my papers. I don't know what possessed her. Maybe she hoped to find some of the letters we supposedly wrote to each other." David held her gaze. "Just know I didn't authorize her to get in my desk, and that I never said a word to her about Daphne's parentage. She's a sneaky, sick-in-the-head, heartless little bitch,
He planted his forearms on the table and leaned slightly forward.
You've got to believe me. I never told her anything. Have I ever lied to you?
Brianna's mouth trembled.
No, she whispered. Never so far as I know. Then please believe me now. She's all hid up about me breaking it off with her. She feels like everybody in town is staring at her and whispering behind her back. Everything she did tonight was intended to discredit you and save her pride.
David broke off.
I'm so sorry she humiliated you.
He leaned even closer.
But as bad as it was, I have to say I've never been so proud of anybody in my whole life. The way you smacked her in the face with that pie, I almost clapped my hands and threw my hat in the air.
Some color returned to Brianna's cheeks, and she smiled slightly. I did let her have it go, didn't I?
You certainly did.
David couldn't squelch a grin.
I only wish you'd punched her lights out while you were at it.
Brianna sank back on the chair and covered her face with her hands. I knew this would happen. I told you, remember? I was so happy, and I feared something would spoil everything. All I can think about now is how Daphne will be hurt. She dropped her hands. If she hears a word of this, it'll break her heart. In that moment, David knew exactly why he had come to love this woman so very much. No matter that Brianna had just been humiliated in public and called names, her biggest worry was for her daughter. David stepped around the table and drew her up into his arms.
Nothing, he whispered, is going to hurt Daphne. I'll run back over and get her post-haste. In the meantime, my family will circle the wagons to protect her. This will blow over. You'll see. If I have to, I'll say Hazel is lying about the whole thing. She's jealous. Anyone with brains can see that. I'll just spread the word that she sneaked through my files and is making up stories to get back at me. I won't suffer a moment of conscience if I do that. She came by the information underhandedly. And if she looks absurd, so be it. My first loyalty is to you and our daughter, not Hazel Wright. She's the one who tossed down the glove. Now she can suffer the consequences. I never loved Hazel. I told you that, and I meant it from the bottom of my heart. I felt no magic with her. I never felt as if I'd die without her. I felt that way about one woman and only one woman, and I'm holding her in my arms.
Oh, David, do you really think you can smooth this over?
I know I can. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. People will believe me. As far as I'm concerned, her teaching career in No Name is finished, and I'll be glad to see her gone.
Brianna had just relaxed in David's arms when a pounding came at the downstairs door of the shop. She and David raced to answer the summons and found Ace and Joseph on the boardwalk. Brianna knew the instant she saw their faces, even blurred by darkness, that something was horribly wrong.
It's Daphne, Ace said gruffly. She's gone.
What? Brianna cried. She tried to bolt outside, but David held her back. Joseph swept off his hat and slapped it against his leg. To David, he said,
after you left, Hazel continued to rant, wiping apple from her face and screaming crazy accusations to anyone who'd listen. Before anyone in the family could react, Daphne must have heard her carrying on.
Ma saw her run from the building. Oh, no, Brianna whispered. Oh, God, no.
We all went looking for her immediately, Ace added. Ma, Caitlin, Rachel, everybody. We searched high and low. There's no sign of her.
Joseph broke in. We left Ma, Rachel, and Caitlin to stand guard at the hall to watch the kids and be there in case Daphne comes back. It's time for us to execute a full-blown search. He searched David's gaze. It's true, isn't it? What she's saying.
It's true, David confessed. I'm sorry I fed you the public version. It seemed best.
Brianna couldn't breathe. She clutched the front of David's shirt. My baby. In that moment, she detested Hazel Wright as she'd never detested anyone. How could the woman do something so cruel to an innocent child?
Should we go over to the hall and ask for volunteers? Ace asked.
David took control of the situation.
No, I want to keep this in the family if at all possible. The fewer people who know, the better off Daphne will be when we find her.
He sighed and thought for a moment.
Okay, we need to do this smart, not run every which way, covering the same ground twice.
Issa bounced up onto the boardwalk. David acknowledged him with a nod.
Let's divide the town into four sections. With only one street, it won't be that hard to branch out and cover every inch of the town. Ace, you go south. Joseph, you take the north end. Issa can take the east section. Brianna and I will take the west side of Maine, because it's where Daphne spends most of her time, either at my office or here at the shop. She's more likely to come out of hiding if she hears her mother's voice. If anyone finds her, fire three shots in the air. If not, let's meet back here in 2 hours.
Brianna's knees were quivering. She watched David's brothers leap into the street, each heading his own way. She turned a frightened gaze on her husband. Oh, God, David, what if we don't find her? He pressed a quick kiss to her forehead.
Don't be silly. It's a small town. Of course we'll find her. Grab your shawl.
Minutes later, they entered the marshal's office. David pulled his key ring from his belt to open the center drawer of his desk.
I want to make sure Hazel doesn't have that report in her possession, he told Brianna. If she starts waving that under people's noses, we'll be sunk.
He huffed with relief when he saw the Pinkerton report lying on top of the other documents, right where Hazel had left it.
Thank God, he said, stuffing the thick envelope inside his shirt and then relocking the drawer. Now it would be my word against hers. She'll have no proof to validate a single thing she says, Brianna whispered.
His gaze followed hers to a yellow scrap of paper lying on the desk blotter. It was a note written in Daphne's childlike cursive. I hate you both. Brianna held the piece of paper over her heart and sobbed. Poor Daphne. She knows now, David. She knows all of it. How must she be feeling, and what foolish things might she do when she's this upset? David vowed that he would make Hazel Wright regret her actions this evening, but dealing with her had to wait. Right now, he needed to find his daughter. 2 hours later, David stood with his brothers again in front of the marshal's office. Nobody had found a trace of Daphne anywhere. Ace suggested that they repeat the search with lanterns.
She must have found a clever hiding hole, he said, and isn't answering when we call her name. We've got to look harder, leaving no stone unturned.
David could feel the tremors that shook Brianna's body and knew she was fighting down rising panic. He squeezed her close, trying to help her stay calm. As Ace suggested, they repeated the search with lights, checking every possible place a child might hide. Being so thorough took even longer, and another 3 hours had passed by the time they met in the street again.
Where the hell could she be? David said. In a town this size, how can a child possibly vanish?
David knew he had to keep it together. His wife needed him to be strong for her. But it wasn't easy. Daphne had now been missing for more than 5 hours. Ace cursed under his breath. Joseph spat. Issa hung his head, making David suspect he was praying.
I've got a thought, Ace said. Maybe she hid in one of the boxcars. A train left for Denver about 5 hours ago. The time frame is right. If she ran straight toward the tracks after she left the hall, she might have climbed in one of the cars and stayed inside when the train started to move.
Brianna's voice came out in a tremulous wail. David almost lost his composure then. Denver had become a fairly large city. Daphne could easily lose her way there. Dear God, if she wandered into a bad area, There was no telling what might happen to her. He must have expressed his thoughts aloud because Joseph spoke up. Her shadow is also missing. Sam, you mean? David glanced around. He'd been so worried about Daphne that he hadn't spared a thought for his dog.
Yep, Sam,
Joseph replied. I'm guessing he's with her, wherever that may be. I haven't seen hide or hair of him. Normally he's right at her heels, David.
You're right, David agreed.
Issa spoke up. If Sam is with her, nobody will harm a hair on her head without going through him first. It comforted David to know that Sam might be with the child. Then as he thought about it, he knew there was no maybe to it. If the animal had been left behind here in No Name, he'd be with David. And he wasn't. The train wasn't scheduled to return from Denver for 4 hours. Ace offered to send out another engine. To avoid a collision on the tracks, I can telephone Denver to make sure the first train doesn't head back this way until the engineer is given the go-ahead. Do it, David bit out. Be at the depot in a half hour, Ace said. The train will be ready to roll by then. David took Brianna into his office to warm her up with a cup of coffee. Rory had returned from the social, and he'd be keeping an eye on things until Billy Joe relieved him early in the morning. The pot of brew on the stove was fresh. David had just filled a cup and handed it to his wife when the telephone rang. Everybody jumped. They seldom got calls at the office because so few places outside the greater Denver area yet had service. His blood ran cold as he stepped over to grab the receiver from the hook. Hello? An operator with a nasal voice asked, Is this Marshal David Paxton?
It is.
The woman said, Please hold, Marshal. I'm patching you through to the Denver Sheriff. An instant later, a deep male voice came over the line.
Hello, Paxton. This is Sheriff Hanson. I need to powwow with you for a few.
David frowned and glanced at his watch.
I'm sorry, Sheriff, but you've caught me at a bad time. Well, you might better hear me out. About an hour ago, I was called downtown because a dog went berserk.
David's heart caught.
What kind of dog?
Yellow and white, fluffy like a collie. He looks a lot like the dog that was with you when you visited my office a couple of months back.
David whispered, closing his eyes briefly. He felt Brianna clutching his arm.
Sounds like Sam's in Denver and attacked somebody,
he told her. The sheriff heard what David said.
You got that right. Some drunk down by the tracks went to pat a little girl on the head and damn near lost his hand for his trouble. He's got a record for accosting women on the street, so I think he had it coming. The child refuses to give me her name, and I can't get close enough to collect her without shooting the dog.
Oh, God, don't shoot him, David said. The girl's my daughter. He's only protecting her. He loves her like no tomorrow.
I figured that, the sheriff replied. I've got two deputies standing guard over her, but they're keeping a safe distance away. It's a rough section of town. You need to get your ass up here.
Thank you for your trouble, sir. I'll get there as fast as I can.
The sheriff gave David directions to where the child was located. When the phone conversation ended, David repeated what had been said to Brianna.
I can't believe Sam bit someone. He's growled a warning to me sometimes when a stranger comes around, but other than that, the worst he's ever done is bare his teeth.
Thank God he did more than that tonight. That man might have harmed Daphne, Brianna said, her face as white as milk. Please, David, we must hurry. Even with Sam there, she may be in danger. David grabbed her arm and led her from the office. Never had a trip lasted so long. Brianna kept turning to David, telling him that something had to be wrong. The train wasn't fueled correctly and was going too slow, or the engineer was lollygagging, not realizing the urgency. Each time she complained, David glanced at his pocket watch.
We're moving along at a fast clip. It just seems slow because we're so anxious to get there. We'll be with Daphne soon.
Soon,
wasn't soon enough for Brianna. After getting off the train, David led her along grimy, trash-littered streets with unerring accuracy until they finally came to the right place. It was a bad section of town, with windows boarded up and bars over all the doorways to prevent burglary. Bits of debris blew willy-nilly in the brisk night wind. Straining her eyes, Brianna finally saw Daphne. She was huddled against a building, her thin arms locked around her raised knees, her head hanging. Across the way, horrible, predatory men staggered along the walkways with whiskey jugs dangling from their hands. On Daphne's side of the street, two armed deputies stood apart at a distance under light posts to divert all foot traffic so no one would get close to the child. Brianna's first instinct was to run to her daughter. David held her back. "Let me go first. She's not near light, and the canine's eyesight isn't that good. In this wind, Sam may not be able to catch our scent right away. If he's going to bite somebody, I'd rather it be me." When David tried to approach the child, Sam lunged forward, teeth bared, acting as if he might rip out David's throat. "Well, now," David said softly, "I'd say you're all head up." To Brianna's amazement, David sat down cross-legged right in the middle of the walkway. She stood well back, afraid of Sam for the first time. He had a crazed look in his eyes, and froth dripped from his jowls. David held out his hand. "Sam, old man, it's me. Sniff the air, buddy. Get my scent, you myopic mutt." Sam crouched, his body bunching to leap, but he also whined, the tone questioning. Brianna's gaze was fixed on her daughter. Daphne looked so dejected. If the child heard David's voice, she gave no sign of it. She sat with the small of her spine pressed against the building, her head resting on her knees. Brianna wanted so badly to run to her, but she held fast, waiting for David to calm the dog down first. "Well, now, Sam," David said, "ain't this a hell of a note? I raised you from a puppy. Get your head out of your ass. I know it's been a terrible night, but hello, it's me. Stop acting like an idiot." David thrust out his hand, and Sam dropped to his belly with a whine. Then he scooted closer, and then closer. Just as David was almost able to touch him, the dog scrambled back to Daphne, circled her, and barked joyously, wagging his nubbin of a tail until his whole rump quivered. David pushed to his seat and moved forward. "Good job, Sam. It'll be fine cuts of beef for you for at least a month. Aren't you something? I think I'll hang a deputy badge on your chest. What a dog you are. The very best. You fought for her, didn't you? And by God, you drew blood. You are amazing." Man and dog met in a collision of strong arms and fluffy fur. Sam was so agile that he was able to leap up and tag David's jaw with glad kisses. David caught the squirming animal to his chest, released quickly, and then intercepted another joyous jump. Sam was clearly relieved to have reinforcements. Brianna, still standing back, felt tears slipping down her cheeks, and she knew she would adore that silly dog until he died. But what held her gaze was her daughter. Daphne didn't react to the glad reunion taking place in front of her. She looked like a child who had dissolved and become nothing but skin, clothing, and a flow of hair draping over her clenched arms. Brianna knew, sensed, as she had once upon a time with Moira, all of the child's feelings. Daphne was flesh of her flesh, blood of her blood, and heart of her heart. Sam, who now recognized Brianna, allowed her safe passage to her daughter. She sat down, drawing the folds of her burgundy gown close to her bent knees, not caring if her skirts were ruined. Brianna tried to speak. Tears blinded her. Moira's face floated in her mind. She had so many things she wanted to say, important things that Daphne needed to hear, but she'd lied to the child for so long that the truth was difficult, if not impossible, to express. All that she could say was,
Daphne, I love you.
The child cringed away from her.
I hate you. Go away. I never want to see you again.
It nearly broke Brianna's heart to hear Daphne say that, but when she searched deep, she couldn't really blame the child. This was her fault, all her fault. Along with all the stale bread and cheese, she'd fed Moira's daughter lies. From the time Daphne had been old enough to understand the word papa, Brianna had spun grand stories, telling the child about her non-existent father, who was looking for gold, but loved her so much. Empty dreams, falsehoods. Daphne no longer had anything solid to believe in. David finished praising Sam and came to sit at Daphne's other side. The dog promptly lay in front of the child, as close to her toes as he could get. Brianna could think of nothing she might say to soothe the child's pain. Regret stabbed her like a knife, and she wanted to weep, but she couldn't allow herself that luxury. She needed to be calm right now and think. The problem was her heart was breaking. David sighed and crossed his legs at the ankle. The men beneath the nearby light posts tipped their hats to him and walked away. David waved goodbye to them. Then he settled back. Brianna wanted him to say something, but he remained silent, apparently waiting Daphne out. The child refused to look up. When the wind lifted her hair, Brianna saw that her small face was puffy from crying.
Go away, Daphne finally screamed. Just go away, both of you. I hate you. I don't want you here. You're not my parents.
She sent Brianna a fiery look.
You aren't my mama. You're only my aunt.
To David, she cried,
I don't have any of your blood. You said you were my papa, but you're not. You're both liars.
Still, David offered no response. At his silence, Daphne rushed on.
I don't have a real mama and papa, only fake ones. I'm going to run far, far away, and neither of you will ever, ever see me again.
Brianna just sat there, feeling as if her heart were shattering into a thousand pieces. Well, now, David finally said, you've got one thing in your life that's not fake, Daphne, a dog that loves you so much he'd die for you. Brianna wiped tears from her cheeks and sent David an exasperated look. This wasn't about the dog. David ignored her visual warning.
Good old Sam, he said, rustling the dog's fur. He's loyal to a fault.
Daphne stifled a sob and rubbed her eyes.
He's my only real friend. When I got hungry, he brought me a bone he found behind a restaurant. I couldn't eat it, and it made Sam sad. Then that awful man came, and Sam bit him. He's my friend for always.
Yep, David agreed. He sure does love you, doesn't he?
He went silent for a moment.
That's kind of strange, because unless I missed something, you don't have any of Sam's blood. But he loves you anyway.
Daphne buried her face against her bent knees. David let her cry for several seconds. Then, in a soft, velvety voice, he said,
love has nothing to do with sharing blood, Daphne. It's a magical thing that happens in the heart.
When Daphne refused to look up, David went on.
A long time ago, two baby girls who looked exactly alike were left on an orphanage doorstep in Boston. One girl's name was Brianna, and the other little girl's name was Moira.
I don't want to hear a stupid story, Daphne yelled, her small body shaking. Just go away and leave me alone.
David ignored her.
Those two girls were what people call identical twins. There's something very special between identical twins. Lots of times, it's as if they are one person in two separate bodies. Brianna and Moira were like that. They sensed each other's feelings. They were absolutely devoted to each other, and they shared everything. Sometimes they even pretended to be each other to fool the nuns at the orphanage. Then, one sad day after they grew up, Moira died. And as she took her last breath, she asked her sister Brianna to raise her baby girl as her very own. That was an easy thing for Brianna to do because way deep down,
Moira had always been a part of her, and she'd always been a part of Moira. Does that make any sense? Brianna felt Daphne lean closer to her. She was almost afraid to breathe for fear of breaking the spell David was weaving. Keep talking. Don't stop. You're getting through to her. Anyhow, David went on, Brianna loved Moira so much that she did exactly as her sister asked and raised Moira's little girl as her very own. When she reported the baby's birth, she listed herself as the mother. And from that moment forward, she was the baby's mother. She was loyal to Moira for always, just like Sam is to you. It wasn't always easy for Brianna to be a good mother. David stopped to stare up at the strip of sky that showed between the buildings. But I don't have to tell you that, Daphne, because you're the baby girl she raised. Nobody knows better than you how hard Brianna worked to keep her sister's baby safe. And nobody knows better than you how much she loved you through thick and thin, sometimes going without food herself so you could eat. Stop! Daphne demanded in a thin, quivery voice. David sighed. I can't stop. This is one story you have to hear, Pumpkin. It's the most important tale I'll ever tell you, barring none. No matter how bad things got, Brianna never broke her promise to Moira. She just kept on, trying her hardest to be a good mama, always putting you first, until somewhere along the way, she started to feel that you really were her little girl, at least in every way that counted. Do you remember all those times? Yes, Daphne admitted. Do you remember writing letters to your papa, asking him to come for you? A man named David Paxton? Yes, Daphne pushed out again. Well, one day, all those letters, a huge canvas bag of them, were delivered to me in No Name. After I read them, I had no choice but to journey to Glory Ridge to see if that little girl, Daphne, might be my daughter. Remember how we met on the street when both of us bent over to pick up the same penny? We almost bumped heads. David chuckled and nodded. Yep, and then I got a good look at you. It took the wind out of my sails, I can tell you that, because you were the spitting image of my mother. And you even had what I thought was the Paxton birthmark on the side of your neck, a mark almost exactly like mine. From that instant forward, I believed with all my heart that I was your daddy. He continued with a modified version of all that had taken place between him and Brianna ever since. I didn't learn I wasn't your papa until just a few days ago. Daphne had definitely pressed closer to Brianna during the story. Now she lifted her blonde head to peer through the shadows at David, apparently captivated by what he was saying. It came as a huge shock to me, he went on, and the news came way too late because I already loved you and your mama way too much to give you up.
Isn't my mama, only my aunt.
Daphne hid her face against Brianna's sleeve and said in a muffled voice, I want a real mama and papa, not pretend ones. Ah, David replied softly, so is Sam your real friend, or is he only your pretend friend? Daphne straightened to shoot him an indignant glare.
Sam is my real friend.
But how can that be? David retorted. You have none of Sam's blood, and he has none of yours. But the friendship between you is real. Daphne nodded emphatically. So, David mused aloud, why can't it be the same with people and love? Brianna isn't truly your mama, but she loves you as if she were. I'm not really your papa, but I love you as if I were. Why can't the three of us decide that love is more special than blood and go on from here? I'll be your papa, and your Aunt Brianna will be your mama, and you'll be our little girl for always.
Because we can't, Daphne cried.
David nudged back his hat to hold her gaze. I think we can. All we have to do is believe in it hard enough. He touched the front of her frock. Do you still have our lucky penny, or were you so mad at me that you threw it away?
Daphne planted a hand over her waist. I still have it.
David smiled. Remember when I told you we should only make wishes on it for truly important things? I think our being a real family is one of the most important things in the world. Maybe if we wish for it to be true on our lucky penny, God will reach down and help us to make it happen. What do you think?
Daphne tugged on the chain to pull the penny from under her frock. In the dim glow from the lampposts, the coin shimmered on her palm.
See there? It's winking at us,
David told the child.
I think there's still enough magic in it to make one great big wish come true. And then we'll just go home and pretend we never heard that ugly lady with the wart on her nose saying all those awful things. What do you say?
Daphne sniffed and smiled faintly. Miss Wright doesn't have warts.
I'm certain I saw warts, David insisted. You willing to place a wager on it? I'll put up a golden eagle and an ice cream at Roxy's that Miss Wright has a huge, ugly wart right on the end of her honker.
I'd win, Daphne said. There's no wart on the end of Miss Wright's nose.
David tousled the child's hair.
You can never collect on the bet if you won't come home with me and your mama to take another look at her.
Daphne stared down at the coin on her palm. Then she flicked imploring glances at both David and Brianna.
If we all three wished really, really hard on the lucky penny, do you think we could be a real family?
Brianna locked gazes with David. She remembered that day when she'd railed at him about the penny and how he'd popped back saying she was right, that people should turn to God, not objects, for help. But then he'd added that it never hurt to have special reinforcements. Perhaps for Daphne, a little magic was needed tonight. Fighting to find her voice, Brianna said,
I think all three of us should wish on the penny so we can be a real family.
David seconded the motion. Daphne stared at the coin for a long while and then clenched her fist around it. David and Brianna enfolded her small hand in theirs, and together, there on that grimy, dimly lighted walkway in a dangerous part of town, the three of them wished aloud that God would make them a family.
Sam seemed to understand.
He whined and licked Daphne's face as if encouraging her to go home. Daphne's eyes filled with tears again.
I don't feel any different. I don't think it worked. I want a real mama and papa, a real family.
It was all Brianna could do not to burst into tears when she saw the longing in Daphne's eyes. It was like going back in time. So often, Moira had looked pleadingly at her and said the same thing. From Brianna's earliest memory, her sister had always yearned aloud for a real mama and papa. It was a wish Brianna had been powerless to grant to her sister, and now it was a wish she couldn't grant her niece.
Well, David said in an authoritative voice, that's only because we hadn't made our wish official. What we need to do is see a judge and have him draw up a bona fide contract that all three of us must sign. I will promise to be your real papa forever and always. Your Aunt Brianna will promise to be your real mama forever and always. And you will have to promise that you will be our real daughter forever and always. After we all sign the document, the judge will stamp it with his official seal, and then it will always be so.
Daphne's little face glowed with hope.
Can the contract also say that my mama will always be my papa's real wife, and that my papa will always be my mama's real husband? No more pretending.
David flashed Brianna a twinkling look and nodded. Brianna knew that the circuit judge who came to No Name was a good friend of David's. He apparently felt certain the man would stamp anything they put before him if he realized how important it was to one beautiful little girl with a dimple in her cheek.
Deal,
David said, pushing to his feet.
As he helped the piano to stand, she echoed with him, "Deal." Daphne scrambled up between them. "Deal," she cried excitedly. As the three of them walked to the train depot, hand in hand, with Daphne in the middle and the dog trailing faithfully at her heels, the little girl looked up at David.
"Can Sam be in our contract too, Papa?"
David was momentarily flummoxed. He wasn't sure how the judge would feel about that. But then he decided that anything could be included in a document that meant nothing legally. It would be an agreement conceived in a child's heart, and the judge would understand. "Sure he can," he assured Daphne. Daphne skipped along between him and Brianna, suddenly happy as only children can be after an earth-shattering event. A few minutes later, as David helped everyone board the train, he smiled, thinking that he now had the one thing he wanted all his adult life, true and everlasting love with the woman of his dreams, a beautiful daughter, and a fabulous dog. In short, he finally had a real family. Epilogue. It was funny how things could turn out, Brianna thought, as she walked with David and their daughter to see the circuit judge, who came to town every 2 months and had taken up temporary chambers at the town hall to conduct court business. It had been only 6 weeks since that momentous night on a dark Denver street. Now David and Brianna were about to make Daphne's dream come true. Under his duster, David wore pressed jeans and the blue shirt Brianna had made him for his birthday, but outwardly he still had a Rough Rider air about him. How odd that she now found that so attractive when it had once scared her nearly to death. Ah, well, the man was so handsome he almost took her breath away, and she seriously doubted that would ever change. There was just something about David Paxton that charmed her, and she suspected that she would be madly in love with him until the day she died. Daphne walked between them. They each held one of her hands. Sam, ever faithful, trailed at the girl's heels. It was a sunny summer afternoon. The sky was powder blue without a cloud in sight, and in her new silk day dress, Brianna felt hot and vaguely nauseated. Doc Holloway, my name's aging physician, assured Brianna that morning sickness was to be expected during the early weeks of pregnancy. Normally, Brianna felt better by noon, but then she'd taken to staying indoors after the sun reached its zenith. Becoming overheated didn't sit well with her these days. David sent her a questioning look. He'd become overprotective since she'd told him she was with child. Brianna smiled. "I'm fine, David. Just feeling a bit wilted. Stop fussing." Instead of paying her any mind, he slowed the pace. He worried constantly that Brianna might start to bleed if she did too much, just as Moira had. That wasn't going to happen. Aside from a queasy stomach each morning, Brianna felt strong, right with the world, and perfectly fine. Excited about signing a contract that would make them a real family, Daphne stepped out ahead of them, trying to hurry them along until her arms were angled out behind her.
"Don't lollygag," she scolded. "We'll be late."
Brianna had talked with David, and they'd decided not to tell Daphne that she would soon have a baby brother or sister until their contract to be a core family was signed and stamped. They both wanted the child to know she was as much theirs as any child that might come along in the future, and Brianna and David hoped to have a passel. They reached the end of the boardwalk and stepped off onto packed dirt gone powdery in the heat. Up ahead, Hazel White's house stood empty, awaiting the newly hired teacher who would arrive in late August. After writing a lengthy letter of apology to both David and Brianna, Hazel had left town to take a higher-paying job in Denver, which she'd snagged only because Brianna, as the wife of No Names Marshall, had insisted that the woman be given a glowing letter of recommendation from the city council and school board. Loving David as Brianna did, she knew how badly she might have behaved if the shoe had been on the other foot.
David Paxton was a man that no woman could easily give up. Happily, Hazel's rant had carried little weight with the townspeople. Why, anybody with eyes could see that Daphne Paxton was the spitting image of her papa and his ma. Gossip had it that if a jilted woman was going to spin lies, she'd best be sure they were believable. Daphne wasn't David's daughter? Pshaw! That little girl was Dory Paxton all over again. Rihanna was relieved to step into the community hall where she was shielded from the sun. She waved a hand in front of her face. David swept off his hat and hung it on a hook. Daphne dashed to the judge's desk, Sam circling around her legs. We're here to sign an official contract to make us a real family. Judge Claymore was elderly, with silver gray hair, kindly blue eyes, and a wry smile. He patted a stack of papers on his makeshift desk, a table normally used for buffets.
Your father gave me all the particulars ahead of time, so it's all drawn up and ready.
David curled an arm around Brianna's waist and led her forward. When they reached the table, he released his hold on her to shake the judge's hand.
Your Honor, good to see you. I hope this heat isn't getting to you. Not badly. One thing about Colorado is that you can always count on cool breezes in the evening.
He stood, as any gentleman would, robed or not, to meet Brianna and shake her hand. Then he resumed his seat to proceed with business. As promised, Daphne, along with her parents, was to sign a contract that would legalize her real family. The judge had good-naturedly prepared a document that would never be recorded, which stated in impressive sounding language that her mama would always be her mama, and her papa would always be her papa, and she would always be their daughter. Even Sam got to sign. David pressed the dog's right front paw onto the ink pad and then the paper.
Now you're my real mama and papa, Daphne cried.
She jumped around, flapping the skirts of the new pink dress Brianna had fashioned for her.
Forever and always.
David's family members began to file into the hall. They had come to witness the nuptials between David and Brianna and the signing of adoption papers to make Daphne legally a Paxton. No one else had been invited because the secret of Daphne's true parentage had to be carefully guarded. The judge had deemed David and Brianna's first marriage to be slightly out of order, and with the adoption of Daphne and the coming of another child, he wanted the union to be unquestionably legal. Brianna had never agreed to the first marriage, and there had been only one witness. David was a fairly wealthy man. The judge wanted to be certain that Brianna's claim to David's estate, in the event of his untimely demise, could never be contested. Brianna wasn't thinking about death when she and David said their vows. She looked into his eyes, those incredibly beautiful and compelling blue eyes, which were so very like Daphne's, and thought about that night, which seemed so long ago now, when she'd confessed to him that she had no sense of direction. He'd vowed then to teach her how to find her way. And he had. Only the lessons had nothing to do with north, south, west, or east. She once envied him his uncanny ability to know exactly which way to go, but now she had developed her own inner compass. As she stood in the midst of his family, which had become hers as well, and said, "I do," she knew that her compass needle would always direct her only one way, straight into David Paxton's arms. The moment David and Brianna's union as husband and wife was signed, stamped, and ready to be recorded, the judge turned his attention to the adoption papers. His expression was solemn as he leafed through the Pinkerton report.
According to this investigation, Stanley Romanek denied all charges and refused to acknowledge any biological connection.
He stopped short and glanced at Daphne, clearly choosing his words carefully so the child wouldn't understand the import of what he said.
I see no legal obstacles to this adoption. There is no one to contest it.
Dory, standing up to Brianna's right, got a curious look on her face. She stepped closer to the desk.
Come again, Your Honor. Did you say
Romanek? Stanley Romanek?
The judge glanced up.
That's right.
Dory pressed her hands to her waist.
That report doesn't by any chance give the Christian name of Stanley Romanek's father, does it?
Claymore pushed his glasses up his nose and leafed through the paperwork. After several seconds, his scowl lessened.
Isa Romanek. His wife's name is Hester.
For an instant, Dory looked as if she might faint. Her son, Isa, stepped to her side to loop an arm around her shoulders.
Ma, are you all right?
Dory leaned against him, nodding as she focused a tear-filled gaze on Daphne.
Right as rain. Isa Romanek is my brother-in-law. Hester is my sister. I haven't seen him in years. They journeyed from Boston to visit me once in San Francisco when Stanley was about 5. He was spoiled rotten, a holy terror, and I...
Dory broke off and swallowed, her attention still fixed on Daphne.
I guess my sister and her husband never saw the error of their ways with him. Stanley's behavior apparently never improved.
Brianna felt lightheaded. Moira's rapist? Stanley Romanek was Dory Paxton's nephew? And David, the love of her life, was related to him? Closely related first cousins, by her calculation. She wasn't certain how she felt about that.
I remember that visit, Ace said, and Hester let that little brat get away with murder. So did Uncle Isa. The kid could do anything, and he was never punished.
Are you certain the name isn't merely a coincidence? Brianna asked.
David inserted, I saw the name Romanek, but I never made the connection.
Ma's maiden name is Jesperson, and...
He broke off and shook his head.
I haven't seen Aunt Hester and Uncle Isa since I was young, and then only once. I don't recall if I was ever told their last name.
Dory met Brianna's gaze.
It isn't a common surname. I named one of my sons after Isa Romanek. Because I admired him so. There can't possibly be two men with that name in Boston married to a woman named Hester.
Stanley is my sister's son. Brianna fanned her face. Everyone in the room, with the exception of the judge and her sisters-in-law, was related to a man who'd been instrumental in killing her identical twin. How was a bride, especially a pregnant one, supposed to take that in without feeling as if she needed to sit down and ask for a glass of water?
I know what you must be thinking, Dory said softly. I'd be thinking it myself, Brianna. But I assure you this isn't a case of bad blood. My sister, Hester, is one of the most wonderful, loving individuals you will ever meet. And Isa is as well. They were just deplorable parents.
God forgive me for saying it, but it's a blessing that Hester could have no more children. They didn't get a chance to ruin another one.
Joseph spoke up.
I remember Stanley, the little shit-stuffed Eden's cat in the hot oven. Ace rescued him, and we doctored his paws for days.
Dory straightened away from her youngest son. Your cousin was, without question, a cruel, out-of-control child, and he obviously grew up the same. She looked straight at Brianna. But he is no reflection on me or the children I raised. My sons are good men, and my daughter is beyond compare.
Brianna recovered her composure and searched the faces of David's brothers. They were honorable men, wonderful men. How could she ask for better brothers-in-law?
Then her wandering gaze found David's. She felt as if she could drown in the depths of his blue eyes. They pulled and drew her in. The next instant, his strong arms locked around her, and Brianna knew she was precisely where she belonged, deeply loved and forever linked to him, heart to heart, flesh to flesh.
Daphne tugged on her skirt.
Mama, does it mean you and Papa Kate adopt me?
Brianna drew away from David and crouched to cup her daughter's face in her hands. There were some things Daphne didn't need to understand until she was much older.
No, absolutely not. We will proceed as planned. It only means that the adoption is merely a formality, dear heart. You're truly a Paxton by blood.
I am?
Daphne beamed a huge grin.
That's wonderful, right?
Brianna smiled up at Dory. That's the most wonderful thing ever. You truly do have your grandma, Dory's temple. Daphne scampered away to grab Dory's hands.
Grandma, did you hear that? I've truly got your dimple.
Dory hugged the child close. Yes, you certainly do. And my birthmark as well. With a great deal of happy chatter pealing out around them, David and Brianna signed the paperwork to make Daphne legally their daughter. The judge stamped the documents with a loud bang, as if to make sure the sound rang clear to heaven. Then he stood, looking regal in his black robe, and thrust out his hand to Daphne.
Miss Paxton, I am pleased to make your acquaintance.
Daphne, ever outgoing, stepped forward to shake his hand.
And I am pleased to meet you, Your Honor.
With the formalities finished, the family was free to leave. A celebration was planned at Ace and Caitlin's. Brianna knew it would be an unforgettable evening with delicious food, music, and dance, and love abounding. And later, she would lie in David's arms while their daughter slept, secure in the knowledge that she belonged with him, and only with him. As they exited the building, Brianna thought once again that it really was funny how things could turn out. Against all odds, Daphne was actually related to David. From the start, he'd kept saying, I know a Paxton when I see one, and he'd been absolutely right. Either that Penny truly was lucky, or God had reached down and shuffled the chess pieces on the board, lining them up so the outcome would be perfect, giving Daphne what Brianna and Moira had never had, a real family.
And that is it. Our reading of Lucky Penny. All right, so who do we got with us?
I'm heading in there now.
All right.
Okay, we got Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Band of Angels, you and me.
All right, so what did you think?
I've always liked this book. I remember when I read it to you, it was, this is beautiful. I like the romance. Yeah, it's a very beautiful story.
Well, I like the ending, how, yeah, it ended up truly being that she was.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
A Paxton by blood, even though Brianna didn't think so, but.
Yeah.
Turned out that way, so.
That's sweet.
So, well, with that, I think we will go say good afternoon, good night, and we will catch everybody tomorrow. Unless you all want to catch the Six and Road Show, which will be happening at 8 p.m. right there on Station 1. And you call 424-243-9617. And then you can catch us tomorrow at 4 p.m. for the Six Eyes Children's Bible Time at 4 p.m. Eastern on this station. And then on Station 1 at 7 p.m. you can catch the Wednesday Night Bible Study on Station 1, and you call 424-243-9617. So God bless everybody, good night, and have a good evening.
Good night. Love everyone.